Happy Wednesday, everybody. Welcome to a brand new installment of the Cyclone Fanatic podcast here, of course, at CycloneFanatic.com. Mr. B Clothing over at 1995 Northwest 86th Street in Clive bringing you today's podcast. As always, stop on in, see Timmy Sitzman and the boys, and they'll get you hooked up with your fall gear. 1995 Northwest 86th Street in Clive. That is my guy, Timmy Sitzman. Welcome in my other guy, Rob Gray, to the podcast today. How are you, Rob?
I'm great. How are you, Chris?
Not bad. I'm getting ready to see my boy Art Briles this weekend.
I know.
Big fan.
Listening to the other podcast, has he autographed those copies yet? Did you send him into the Baylor Athletics Department?
Funny thing about that is down at the Big 12 Media Day down in Dallas, I was not even aware at this point that Art was – I call him Art because, you know, we're boys. I was not even aware that Art was writing another book or had written – another book. And I was there because I was wanting to talk to him about Mark Mangino to work on a story for that, and some credentialed media guy brings up a book, the new Briles book, and asks for an autograph
with the credential hung on a lanyard.
It was borderline offensive to me.
It's a big no-no, cheering, and you also don't ask for autographs. I mean, those are two of the cardinal sins right there.
Didn't some guy ask Kirk Ferentz for his in Chicago a couple years ago?
I heard tell of that incident, yes.
That's insane. But as much as I would love to have an Art Briles autograph book, I don't.
You'd have to buy it, maybe on eBay.
I'll just have to settle with sleeping next to my mantle
there you go.
Every night. Yeah, but I'm a big Art Briles guy. They're coming to town, and I think the lead story today, while it's not going to really affect Iowa State at all on the football field come Saturday, but Rob Standard, a fourth string running back.
He was third before he dropped off the depth chart this week.
Okay. Third string running back Rob Standard has left the program. Your report on CycloneFanatic.com's front page right now, because he's going to graduate early. I have not watched the Rhodes video yet. I've just been slammed this morning with other stuff, but is that the story?
Sure. He's a redshirt freshman, so I presume he'd graduate in about four years, you know, which is a feat for anybody, let alone within an athletics program of any type. That's what Rhodes indicated. He was asked by our friend Tommy Birch if noticed the depth chart change and asked if he's good to go for the game, and Coach Rhodes said no, and noted that he was on pace to graduate the spring.
Maybe this is inappropriate. Are you buying this? Because it seems legit to me.
Yeah, and I mean, if you look at it, regardless of whether he is going to graduate in May, I mean, I don't think there's any reason to blow smoke about him going to graduate in May. It was the first thing out of his mouth.
Yeah.
It could have been.
Did you talk to Rob?
It wasn't working out. No, I'm sorry.
Coach Rhodes.
Coach Rhodes, okay. Yeah, because he's not there anymore.
Just your quotes seemed very believable. This is what was going on. It wasn't a burnout. It wasn't a Jacob Gannon thing where you hear one thing and then it turns out to be another. Yeah. It seemed pretty straightforward to me.
Yeah, and I think clearly there's one would start to focus on academics more, particularly in that situation, knowing also that you're not seeing the field. According to participation reports, he was on the field briefly against Kansas State, not against NDSU, and not against Iowa.
I thought he took one snap against Iowa.
I thought
Iowa.
He did too. I mean, we all kind of saw that mirage.
Yeah. Apparently we did. So this Martinez Syria kid checks in. I still don't think he plays this year.
I don't either.
Why is he on the depth chart, I wonder? They usually don't go four deep at running back, do they? I mean, they have the past few years because they're playing like 10 guys.
They had the four deep for DeVario Montgomery, remember, when he went from second, toward the top to the bottom, maybe seemingly as a sort of a little bit of a message or maybe an indication of some stuff that had happened in the spring or something. But, it was an unusual maneuver. I think, though, when you look, as Rhodes mentioned, their backs run hard, like Aaron Wimberly, Devondrick Neely in particular.
Yeah. Okay.
And then, you've got a redshirt freshman there. Third string is also a pretty diminutive guy. Syria has some bulk to him at 6'6", 205. And I think they feel like if they need to do a goal line thing, if they really need to have a third down back at times, and he shows that he can do that more in practice consistently, they'll use him. But I think right now it's just to sort of say, all right, this guy's here, and he could sort of fit that bill.
I remember when he committed last year, just made some calls, and birdies were telling me that he, just because of his frame alone, would be a potential player as a true freshman if needed. Even more, I think Mike Warren, the other true freshman running back, probably has more of an upside as far as a Big 12 featured running back. But yep. I don't think – I saw you put on Twitter something like the frame is really different regarding the two guys. One guy could use the year to grow more than the other.
Absolutely. And I think both of them clearly can use the year to grow, which is why Rhodes also said, you know, we're going to have to see a lot of things, see how this week goes and everything before we determine to put him out there even for a snap.
Yeah, don't play him, but coach. Play him. And at this point, you're through three games. Don't play your middle linebacker. What's his name? Jordan Harris.
Just
sit him. He's off the depth chart now. Jordan Harris has dropped off the depth chart completely. To me, I don't know about you, but how many times do you see a JUCO who has not played through three games and then they end up playing? To me, I mean, unless things would go very awry at the middle linebacker position, don't play that kid.
Yeah, I think you have to redshirt him now. And I think because, you know, remember when he was signed, everyone talked about he was one of the leading tacklers at the JUCO level, and maybe just the adjustment to the system. I mean, get him in there, let him redshirt for a year, get his feet wet. You know, Jevin Miller's a senior. Some guys will move along, and you know, if he gets up to speed, I think, you know, his upside is still high too.
Baylor poses a significantly different threat offensively than so did the first three teams.
Yes.
They were very much I don't want to even call North Dakota State and Kansas power running teams. I don't think that accurately described. They're more hybrid teams where they can beat you both ways.
Mm-hmm.
Baylor can run the football, but it's a very different way of running. Everything's spread out. Everything.
Yep.
So I assume linebacker-wise, we're going to see – a heavy dose of that nickel package. I mean, what do you think we're going to see from Iowa State's defense? The Mitchell Myers moving inside is very telling to me.
Yep.
They want more speed out there. I think we're going to see some more. We saw some three-down lineman sets against the University of Iowa. I'm just curious, what do you think about defensive sets on Saturday?
Well, I agree with you there. I mean, you've got to run some nickel, and you've got to have guys. I mean, does Jared Bracken see the field again?
That's a great question. I was wondering that too, because athleticism-wise, he's clearly advanced to Drake Furch, but I trust Drake Furch a lot more than I do Jared Brackens. Is there a chance we see both of them? I think that that's a fair question.
I think they'll run a lot of guys in and out, and Furch has really impressed him with just being dependable. And when you can have dependable guys there occupying their spot the way they're supposed to, you can have other guys clean it up rather quickly versus being all over the place. Your head's not always there, so. Yeah, I think a lot of guys are going to see. I mean, we've seen guys get in for just a couple snaps in the previous three games. I think we'll see even more of that against Baylor, given the speed of
with. Isn't Baylor, and I guess this could be the case for anybody, but isn't just being in a remotely right position more important than athleticism? Because that's what they do. That's Art Briles' style of football. We take advantage of space. And if you're combating that. I mean, that was my old deal on Monday, and I asked Rhodes about this, is film study more important against Baylor than another team? Because my whole thing was there's no way your scout team can mimic that. There's no way your first team offense can mimic what they're going to do. Is that more important than, you know, actual on-field scout work this week? So, I mean, if it That's what concerns me about this weekend. We all love Iowa State's secondary, the future of that group. But the discipline that they had to have against the University of Iowa compared to what they're going to need on Saturday night, it scares me that this could be a very eye-opening experience for that group.
Yeah. I mean, they were so good. I mean, Coach Rhodes alluded to after the game, the four sacks, that it's almost unheard of on an Iowa offensive line to get four sacks.
Especially against an Iowa State defense. I mean, it doesn't happen.
You know, 15 sacks the last two seasons, you know, each. And he mentioned a lot of those were coverage sacks, you know, just really good coverage downfield. And I know Iowa's receivers, they didn't have some of their speed guys out there a whole lot in that game. But nonetheless, they're, you know, big, you know, they're Power 5 conference receivers, and the coverage was that good. So yeah, it's a big test. And as Coach Rose said, I had asked the question about Sam Richardson. How does he view this game? The quarterback, Sam Richardson,
yeah,
with Bryce Petty on the other side of the field, and he twisted it back to say, which Sam do you mean? Because he mentioned that Sam E. Richardson had a very subpar game against Baylor last season. He has something to prove.
Who didn't?
And, well, yeah, I mean,
when
it's 71-7, how many people do you look at? You know, but he, every now and then, the punt game's pretty good under those circumstances.
Just a demoralizing post-game show that night. Whitford and I were sitting there trying to give, like, our Cyclone that delivered by Prairie Brand Seeds.
Oh.
And we're like, dude.
Did Kirby have a nice night?
Kirby didn't even play that well, I remember.
Yeah.
He racked up the total yardage, but it was I think we gave it to, like, Devondrick Neely because he scored his first touchdown of his career. I think so. I mean, you know what? I've done my best to forget about that night.
I think they have, too.
I'll say this, though. That postgame show wasn't nearly as brutal as North Dakota State this year.
You told me that was just –
yeah, I mean, that was the worst one ever. But the Baylor one last year, I think most people – I just remember getting texts from our director of sales, Adam Gray, who's the biggest Cyclone fan you'll ever meet.
Yeah.
And he's a fan, too. Like, Adam is – he's full-blown voice of the fan. Like, that's he loves it. He gets into it. He and I have very interesting conversations because I don't really think of it like a fan anymore. I think of it in so more of a professional manner. And he you should look at the text messages we're sending back and forth during a lot of these. And I thought Adam was going to have like a total meltdown after that Baylor game last year. Like, it was just. But the point it's got at the end, I think a lot of fans thought it was comical. Not that they were laughing at their team, but it's like, Jamie. And you could hear it in the Cyclone Radio Network broadcast.
Oh, yeah. I actually tweeted some from that, and I can't remember who they, you know, who soldiered in to kind of talk about that in the postgame with Eric Heft. I think I might have even tweeted
probably
out. This is one of those games where I feel really bad for Eric Heft going through there.
Jeez.
I mean, it was I think people were to some degree shell-shocked, you know, rendered speechless.
Yeah.
By that sort of game, because it started early, and it was like that steam, but the steamroller's operating about, you know, like IndyCar speeds, and once it started, I mean, it was just a flat line from the Cyclone side, like they were just, whoa, and Baylor was just rolling along at that high speed. It was, one that they're trying to forget, and I know every Cyclone fan's trying to forget.
They've been working on that for about a year now, because I remember going into that game, too, the spread was insane. It was like 30 points or something like that, and we're all like, man, that's a lot of points.
Yep.
Well, they could have doubled it
and
still covered last year. That won't be the case, though. Baylor is and I've always said they're my second favorite team.
Yeah.
Everybody knows that. But they're a very different team away from home, and I think we'll see that on Saturday night. 7:20 kick, Mr. B Clothing Podcast here at CycloneFanatic.com. Rob Gray, our senior writer – our senior hack blogger,
yes,
joining us today. Well, we're going to start doing. We've wanted to do this more weekly, but it's always like you've been. This is a good segue because you were working on that George Niang piece. We couldn't bring you on during the bye week.
Yep,
that was a great piece. Did you enjoy writing that?
I appreciate it. I did enjoy writing that. excuse me.
It's all good.
George was nice enough to sit down. You know, Matt Schultz and Iowa State Sports Information set up a time to sit down with him. He gave me numbers, you know, for people to call.
It was a very different type of story than I've ever seen about George Niang.
Well, I wanted to – this is what I try to do. I mean, I try to get at who is this guy or who is this woman, if it is writing about women's hoops in the past or something like that, or even track or something like that. But and I feel like I did. I mean, all of those things are going to be superficial, whether you have 1,000 words, 4,000 words, 10,000 words. I mean, there are things you leave out. In fact, I might have a little bit of a extra I'll put together at something
a trimmer
at some point. Yeah, just a little, what would it be, emptying the notebook as far as that goes, because there were lots of other interesting stories told. But I was just struck by the fact that, you know, everybody knew about the physical transformation he made because there were the before and after pictures. There was a discussion of what he did, so I thought I'd lead with that, but then try to tie it up with the mental transformation he'd gone through from a guy who couldn't sit still. It was a challenge to get any homework done with his mom, you know, and then they had to try to get into Tilton and the big tuition bill and the family chipping in. I just think it was a really good human story that I was, you know, fortunate enough to be able to recount.
It's good, too, because, I mean, I think everybody had always seen a layer of George Niang where it's like, man, this guy's really a character, but that – I think it humanized him a little more to a lot of people. The more the most fascinating thing that I took from the story was that the story of him at the Tilton School. Mm-hmm. I remember when he was the class president, because this was during his recruiting stage, and I was covering recruiting a lot more than I do now. But I remember talking to, like, seeing George on Twitter. Like, I mean, he's like hashtagging Cyclone Nation with the one capital I. He's talking trash about Iowa.
Yep.
Like, man, this guy, like, before he got the, usually, I mean, you see that a little bit from recruits, but this guy was, to quote Paul Rhodes, all in from the second he committed to Iowa State. But I do remember that recruitment. They were concerned just based off of how he was playing towards the end of that AAU season and who he was playing with, so he had a lot of eyeballs on him.
Yep.
They were very concerned about who was coming in late on George Niang.
Oh, and yeah, everyone you could pretty much conceive of was coming in and expressing interest. And his mom, Allison, told me that there was really, you know, she said that you could tell George was excited about that, you know, because he'd always been the underdog. He'd always been the guy who are they coming to see? People would come to the gym, but they weren't coming to see him.
Correct. Even though he was, like, leading his team
in
scoring.
And all that stuff.
Yeah.
Yeah, and it's for some reason, you know, the other, you know, the handful of other guys would you know, Wayne Selden, you know, Noel, guys that he played with, would jump off the court or the page to a lot of people that were looking at bringing in players. But so he was excited about that, but it seemed as if he never wavered. I mean, the fact that Iowa State was in that early showed the commitment, showed the, you know, literally bared it all to that. You know, here's what you can do for us and here's what we can do for you, and made it clear what that relationship could lead to. He appreciated that. It's clearly something that's, I mean, he forms deep bonds, obviously, and you could see that with how he talked about the Tilton School, and clearly with how he talks about Iowa State now, too. I mean, the idea that this guy from, you know, around Boston is loving Ames, Iowa. I mean, some guys say, yeah, I love being on the program or whatever, but I think he really loves Ames, Iowa, you know, because of the people, because of the bonds he's formed with, you know, whether it be fans after the game signing autographs, where he always stays late for that stuff. It's a guy who seems to be loyal, extremely loyal to everyone.
I had a friend, good friend, point out, I think it was George's even freshman year, when it, you know, there was a point during that freshman year where you're like, okay, this guy could be special. And just by the way George would wear his heart on his sleeve and just act on the basketball court, my friend said, this guy's going to go down as like the most popular player ever, next to Hoiberg. And I totally see that developing. Just the whole, you know, the Band-Aid thing.
Yeah.
I mean, people really like him. It's not even because he's great at basketball. People like him.
Mm-hmm.
And I thought that's what your story did, too. It showed a whole new level.
Yeah, there's a magnetism to his, you know, the character side of him, but also the side of him that clearly, you know, there's that very deep side to him that he's sort of mined and developed. You know, he's still a pretty young guy that he's put together. I remember his coach, Marcus O'Neill at Tilton, said something toward the end about after the class president thing, outside of basketball, he said, I could see him being the mayor of a town someday. And funny to hear that word mayor when we talk about second to Hoiberg maybe in terms of popularity. But, I mean, people warm to his personality, whether it's during the highs or during the tough times, like which led to the Niang-ing and, of course, the foot.
Do you remember
the tourney and
I don't know if you were there, but the locker room in Dayton where, you know, the images of him just wailing after that loss.
Oh, to San Antonio?
No, I'm talking
about the Ohio State game.
Freshman year. Yeah, but – and that was I that was really the start of it to me, because it's like fans are like, man, that guy is hurting worse than we are.
Yeah.
That's how it should be. You know, the players – that's the thing. Like, fans were hurting after North Dakota State football this year, but they weren't hurting as badly as Sam Richardson probably was. I mean, and Niang really captured that. I remember Matt Van Winkle got that video up before anybody, I think, of Niang just losing it in that locker room. And that, I think that was the start of it. Now, he's Mr. B Clothing Podcast here at CycloneFanatic.com. I picked up, I haven't written much about this yet, but all the preseason magazines are out. Lindy's has Iowa State top 10, has him ranked 10th. You know, Niang has an opportunity here to kind of be the Doug McDermott of his era in the sense that he's probably going to be a four-year guy. I don't mm-hmm. see, no matter what George does this year, I don't see him going pro. Mm-hmm. Just me.
Yep.
And I've had a couple people tell me that too. Just yeah. He's not that type of prospect.
Sure.
Probably playing the pros someday, but I don't see him being like a lottery pick after his junior year. He's got to, if he can develop that three-point shot even more, and he's been pretty good, but if he can take that to a next level, that's when, you know, potentially we could start talking about that stuff. But, I mean, where do you see him? Do you think he is, like, do you see him as an elite player going into the season?
Oh, I think there's no doubt he's an elite player going into the season. It's a matter of, like you said, becoming even more consistent with that three-point shot because he was pretty streaky there.
Yeah.
It didn't seem like he was ever really off by much when he was off, too. So that
– He keeps shooting.
Yeah, and that's another thing. I mean, that's a great player. That's going to be his mentality. It's going to go in. It's going to go in because I'm doing it the right way. I mean, I'm in rhythm and all that stuff. So – I think there's no doubt he's an elite player, but I also agree that he's one of those players that 4 years in college, 4 years at you know, under a guy like Hoiberg would be extremely advantageous to him. You know, it's the guys, you know, like, you know, they're one and done guys, of course, like your Wiggins and, you know, and all those guys mm-hmm. that their athleticism is off the charts, but I wouldn't put it beyond the realm of possibility if he has the type of elite season, their exploration.
It's possible.
After junior season.
Yeah, it's possible.
But I'm on board with you pretty much thinking the perfect four-year type of guy to completely develop his body of work and see where that takes him at the next level. So he'll certainly make a lot of money.
I've never seen
– Somewhere, for sure.
He'd be a perfect European player.
Oh, he would be dominant.
Yeah. Like really good. He could be like the – I mean, think like if Kevin Love would play in.
He'd be
you know,
a guy.
I'm trying to think of some guys who – I remember that's who Hoiberg compared him to when mm-hmm. he signed. It was potentially mm-hmm. Kevin Love. That type of a talent and put him in Europe,
yeah,
it'd be dangerous.
He'd be a guy that would be the cornerstone of a few championships. He'd make a lot of money, and then he could probably milk it for another few years just as a glue guy that still would throw out, you know, those games at 28-18 now and then, you know, just because of his winning mentality and track record.
I just remember, too, and this is what's more impressive to me than anything. Somebody once told me within the program that we were talking about George's body. This is when he first came on campus. I don't think he'd ever played a game mm-hmm. for Iowa State. And they're like, yeah, that's the problem. It's just we don't think that, you know, he could lift weights 20 hours a day and eat everything, and we still don't think his body's ever going to be
– Yeah.
you know, what it needs to be. And I think he's defied a lot of odds there.
Absolutely. I mean, even before the much ballyhooed transformation that we saw in the before and after pictures, I mean, think of what a tremendous player he's been from day one. Well, he had an impact on games immediately.
And he got a lot more fit from his freshman year to sophomore year, too. People forget about that.
Mm-hmm.
This wasn't just a this summer thing.
Yep.
It's been kind of a transformation that he's been working on for – couple of years, and now I think he just took it to the next level.
And even before that, at Tilton, they were talking about how he was, and I even looked back at a few old articles in which he was playing there and at the AU, and he was talking about taking better care of his body and working on that. You know, he referred to himself as a chubby eighth grader back then, and ever since then, it's been...
You're just sat around playing
steps,
video games.
Steps by steps. Well, he played a lot of hoops,
yeah,
obviously, too, but yeah, I mean, there was that.
Didn't he say that in your piece?
Yeah, it was something like that. I asked him what eighth grade George would think of
the
current George taking to yoga like he does, you know, a meditative art like that and exercise. And he said, I think he'd probably think he's a loser.
Yeah.
But nonetheless, that's a different person. And he still has that guy, but he's also the guy that sees the value in that. And it just enhances his value as an individual and obviously in his maturity as an individual on and off the court.
Got a lot coming up next week. It's going to be a busy week. Wednesday is media day for men's basketball. It's also our basketball tip-off party down at the keg stand, 6 o'clock start. Special guests will be in attendance. Very special, special guests. Just wanted to tease that one more time. 6 o'clock is the start. No, Art Briles will not be there, unfortunately. Tried to get him, but his agent would not succumb to – although his agent knows how big of a fan I am of his. And then Thursday's women's basketball media day. So, again, basketball sneaking up on us. And then, like, the next week, I think, is Kansas City, Big 12 basketball media day. And this Hoops Mania, this Hilton Madness was announced yesterday. That's going to be the same night as the Texas game. Nice little strategic move by Jamie Pollard and company here. You get all these people together, and they can watch the Longhorn Network on the big screen at Hilton Coliseum.
Yeah.
Did you think about that?
It's a nice tie-in. And also to include women's basketball in this, because I know that was a big thing. And I know some people are disappointed it's not midnight, but you got to think about everyone in the fan base. You think about the women's fan base. I mean, they're going to make it sort of like a full-on festival of the three major sports at Iowa State.
It seems really short, though. Like an hour?
Yeah, well, what? Doors open 5:30. Stuff starts at 6. There was something I thought I saw there at 7:12. Oh, that's when they're preparing for the
– I'm just saying, like, they're going to do a dunk contest. They're going to do a three-point contest. Like, you only got an hour for all that? I feel like they should be going, like, 2 hours or something.
Well, they got autographs, you know, too.
I'm just saying. I mean, I feel like it should be a little longer. But it makes sense, though, because now if you don't have Longhorn Network, mm-hmm. this is a opportunity – or you don't have Cyclones TV.
Yep.
This is an opportunity to watch the game. That was an underlying thing that I picked up on this from a marketing standpoint.
Yeah.
It's like they caught a lot of flack for that. They're mm-hmm. going to continue to catch a lot of flack for that. This is a nice move, I thought, on Iowa State's part.
Absolutely. I mean, I think it could be longer, but you know, it's baby steps. I think I said in one case because it's been a long time, and the fact that they have this much interest around the program to the point where Lindy's is preseason rating of top 10 after you lose to DeAndre Kane and Melvin Edgem.
That's, yeah.
I mean, all the momentum is there. So just kind of get everybody together and see where it goes. And then maybe it's midnight, you know, for.
I really feel like if Iowa State, with the excitement around the program, with the reputation of the fan base, all you have to do is watch a game at Hilton. I would like to think if Iowa State wanted a Midnight Madness, they could get it. If, like, Baylor gets it.
Yeah.
There's a lot of Baylor talk, but like if you watched a game in Waco and then you watch a game in Ames.
Yeah.
I mean, Fred Hoiberg is a rock star on the basketball scene. My point is, I think if Iowa State wanted a Midnight Madness, they should be able to get one.
No, I totally agree with that.
Because there's a reason Baylor gets that, and there's a reason why Baylor is getting to play on that like hoops marathon mm-hmm. thing every single year or whatever. It's because they're pushing for it.
Yeah.
And that's why, and that's another reason I talk about it a lot. I really admire Baylor because they do things that are perceived as cool. They push the envelope with that type of deal. I feel like if Iowa State wanted that, they could get it.
No, I totally agree with that. I just think that at this point in time, probably don't feel like it's the right thing.
I don't understand that.
Well,
I'm not expecting you to defend it here. I don't understand that.
I'm on the hot seat.
No,
trying
I'm
to
just
speak for the
you're not.
You know,
no,
athletics
you don't
department.
You don't have to do that. I'm not asking you to do that. I just. Like, I'm very much I railed about this last week and caught some flack for it, like on the football uniforms. And I'm not going to go off on this rant again.
Yeah.
But there's something to that. You don't have to be Maryland and be, like, completely.
Please don't. Yeah.
No, because that's horrible.
Yeah.
But you can do, like, a camo cardinal and gold uniform. Be
you could
sweet.
Do, like, Baylor light, you know, because Baylor has become trying to do the Oregon thing. I know
Dude,
the colors are similar, but.
I love the Oregon and Baylor thing. I think it's cool.
It's fun. I mean, it's a little overdone, though. There's a little bit too much,
I think. They kept their identity.
But I'm kind of, you know, I'm a middle-aged guy. I'm not cutting edge.
My point is, I think Iowa State, even if it costs you some money, even if you go on the red a little bit.
Yeah.
Let's get a rapper to come into town. Let's do this up big and do the midnight thing.
Maybe Jake McDonough can set up the Tech 9.
No, we need a real rapper.
Oh, okay. Well, they're something. I mean, what are you talking about? You kicking it old school, or are you talking about, like, you know?
Snoop Dogg.
Okay. Semi-old school, kind of old, new.
But he's
bridge.
Still relevant. He's still relevant. Yeah. Somebody you can afford.
Yeah. I will say this about the midnight deal. I'm just going to flat out assume that they really tested the waters there with the fan base, maybe with some key boosters, supporters, people that they know and trust, and felt that more people would be maybe off-put about having to come in at midnight.
Oh, get alive, people.
Well, I'm that's the best
if you don't
speculation
wanna,
I could come up
if
with.
If you're an Iowa State basketball fan and the midnight thing turned you off, then I'm sorry, you're kind of dorky. That's just me.
But you might be kind of old like me too, though. I mean
deal with it. It's your team. You're perennial. You're a top 10
I mean,
team.
I'll cover it, but
you're a top 10 team potentially. I don't know. Whatever. It's irrelevant.
I don't disagree with you.
But my whole point when we started this was actually I'm patting Iowa State on the back because they figured out a way to roll this Texas Longhorn network thing.
Mm-hmm.
And it's actually fairly genius if you look at it from that standpoint. Because now, not only can you watch the game, you can watch it with thousands of other Cyclone fans on a giant TV screen.
Absolutely.
Really shrewd move on their behalf. I wonder if that was the what it came down to, potentially, too. Like, they saw this opportunity. That's really, really smart. And it, I didn't think of it until it was last night, about 5 o'clock. I'm like, oh, wait a second. Yeah. I didn't think of it like that.
Yeah.
But that's really smart.
Well, yeah, tying in, again, all those elements. It's one thing that under Jamie Pollard, the athletics department has really done a good job of doing, which is, you know, one thing piggybacks off the other, or you know, there are a lot of ways in which there's, you know, this term that I kind of hate, but it's appropriate, synergy.
Yeah.
With a lot of things. When there's momentum here, you use it to pull up here and vice versa and that kind of thing. And here you just kind of go across all the fronts. And like you said, to be able to unite people to watch that game.
It'll be
under those circumstances on that network, et cetera.
Good family deal. Me as a 30-year-old guy without any children, if I were to watch, say, like the Minnesota Vikings, I wouldn't want to be in a giant arena where I can't have a beer.
Oh, sure. Yeah.
But I think that's Iowa State's always doing the family thing, which I admire.
Mm-hmm.
That to me makes that would be really cool if they get like some children things to occupy the children during the football game down on the basketball floor. Yeah. Now, that'd be really cool.
And I'd be surprised again also if that didn't play into it. I mean, how many parents would say, yeah, I'm going to bring my 8-year-old to the Midnight Madness deal versus 6
Correct.
O'clock. Okay, I can get him in. We can do that.
They're all about that, and Jamie Pollard will be the first one to tell you that because he feels like every kid he gets in that's that whole tailgate tour
mm-hmm.
thing that they did. Like they're a firm believer that they have grown the fan base because they've gotten in front of so many youth at a young age. And, you know, if Paul Rhodes shakes their hand, that kid's a Cyclone for life, you know.
Yeah.
I remember going back to my NASCAR fandom. This is a true story. This is how ridiculous I was. So my dad and I grew up a Bill Elliott fan because that's who my dad liked. I got to a point, I was probably like 10, where I still liked Bill Elliott. He was still my favorite driver.
Mm-hmm.
But I was kind of at the point where, you know, I'm going to spread my wings and fly a little bit. Well, we're sitting in a pool where it's like two nights before the Brickyard 400, the inaugural Brickyard 400. I believe it was the inaugural one. If it wasn't, we've been to like 15 or 20 of those races.
Mm-hmm.
And my dad doesn't know a stranger, talks to everyone. Dad starts chatting it up with this guy who happens to be the, like, show car driver for a unknown guy named Elliot Sadler at the time. He was driving for the Wood Brothers, number 21, the famous 21 Sitco car. And this guy gives me some, like, a hat, some T-shirts, whatever, and bada bing – even though Elliot Sadler sucked, and he sucked his whole career, who do you think my favorite driver was? So that's
Elliot Sadler, yeah.
Tie that into the Pollard.
Mm-hmm.
It makes sense. Makes a lot of sense.
He didn't always suck. He's very competitive in Nationwide Series, you know.
Don't give me that. That's like saying, oh, he's a good FCS team.
Well, I guess I have no retort to that.
I don't want my guy to be good at the nationwide level.
Put him in a ride. Well, okay. He's had some decent.
Not into your moral victories, Gray. You know what? He should have won the damn championship back in the day. I want to say it was like 2005.
Yeah.
He was like third in points going into the chase, and Robbie frickin' Gordon wrecked him like four times. He had a vendetta with Robbie Gordon.
A name that will live in infamy.
Oh, everybody hates Robbie Gordon. All he did was
colorful
wreck.
Guy.
All he did was
he did
wreck people.
A lot of people.
That's all he did. It was unbelievable. Every week he's taken out a contender. He's like a lap car. Whatever. You get me off on my NASCAR, and it gets a little nasty. I can get pretty fired up in a hurry. All right. We're about 35 minutes. We wanted to do a shorter one today. We both have to run. Thank you, Rob Gray.
Thank you, Chris.
Good job in the Yang story.
Appreciate
What's
it.
What's coming up this week? You talked to Jake Knott. Is that right?
Yeah, yeah. You know, a lot of it looking back here and there, and I know that Iowa game was big, you know, where he had the tip interception, but that Baylor game, given the circumstances.
Legendary.
He went through, and as Paul Rhodes said when I asked him to characterize it, the one word he used was epic.
Oh, yeah. It's a great word for that, yeah.
Because he wasn't going to play, and Rhodes said that Jake just called him up and said, you know, they say I can do this. And he just almost didn't believe him.
Unbelievable.
And, yeah, I mean, to perform, not only play that game, but perform the way he did in such a huge win. I mean, Baylor wasn't Baylor now, but they were still putting up high 40s per game, I think.
They were like a Holiday Bowl team, I think, that year.
Yeah.
So it's a good team. It's
I mean,
not
held them to well under half their average that day. Steel Jantz had that incredible 381-yard performance as well.
Oh, Steel Jantz. Did you ever catch up with him?
I tried.
Been trying.
Someday there will be an interesting story
We have to hear this story about your
Don
attempt
Quixote-like quest to
find Steel Jantz.
And any real tie to him.
Yeah. He's just completely dropped off the planet.
Yeah.
We'll save that for another podcast because this is fascinating, Fanatics. I'm encouraging Rob to write a story. So the point was you were trying during the Iowa week to track down Steel Jantz.
Yes.
And Rob here went through – all sorts of channels to try and track down Steel Jantz. We cannot find Steel Jantz. We found a brother of Steel Jantz, but he never returned your call, right?
No, they tried to work with me, but for whatever reason, he didn't really appear to want to do it.
Yeah. Well, this is a fascinating story that I want you to write at some point, your quest to track down Steel Jantz and how you were unsuccessful.
It will happen, and there are some leads. There are some intriguing leads and possibilities, but it's all secondhand information. So
well, we need to we need to get on that.
Absolutely.
We got to.
We got media days next week, though.
Yeah, I know.
Stuff.
There's too much going on. There's too much going on. Thanks for listening, everybody. Mr. B Clothing, 1995 Northwest 86th Street in Clive. Radio coming up tomorrow night, 6 to 7 from Benchwarmers. I actually have a Baylor guy who covers Baylor, radio guy from down in Waco. We do it every year. We swap. He does my show. I do his. And he will be on lead off the 6 o'clock hour with us, the Nebraska Furniture Mart radio show on 1460 KXNO. 6 to 7, Brent Bloom will be there. Jeff Woody will be there. And we'll get you set for Saturday. Wilson Toyota pregame show coming up. Let's see, it's a 7:20 kick. So we will be on the air at 4, from 4 to 5 on 1460 KXNO. He's Rob Gray. I'm Chris Williams. So long, everybody.